Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
August 8th, 2006, the Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, 10 tips for great location photos. Well, welcome back to the show. I'm back in San Francisco now after wandering around the southwestern part of Iceland with some of the world's greatest photographers. And when I say some of the world's greatest photographers, I'm not kidding. I'm talking about guys like John McDermott, John Isaac, Michael Reichman. The list goes on and on and on. These guys were terrific. And so while I was out there working, trying to make the best images possible, trying not to embarrass myself while I'm shooting with these guys, I also had a chance to learn from them and to pick up some practical tips. I combined these with the things that I use all the time, and I thought, you know, this would be a good time just to have a top 10 tips for working in the field show, because they're very handy. Even though some of them seem very common sense, they really aren't when you stop to think about them. And you'll be amazed at when you're presented with a great landscape, what you'll forget. The stuff that you know, man, just goes right out of your head because you're standing there, you're mesmerized, and you're just like clicking away. So I thought, well, let's just take a deep breath and go over a few tips here, and maybe you might even want to write them down. I'll list them on the show notes too, so maybe you don't have to write them down. You can just listen to the show and grab those show notes later. I also have some housekeeping, but I'll do that a little bit later at the end of the show. Let's just get to shooting right now. The first thing I want to talk about is chasing the light. And this is an important one because light changes dramatically over the course of a day. And then depending on your location, how far north you are and so forth, the quality of the light is different than, let's say, if you're shooting more, let's say, in the southern United States. So the lighting is different by location, but it's also different by time of day. And the thing that you want to look out for is planning your shoots so that you're doing too much shooting in the middle part of the day. The sun is usually pretty high in the sky at that point. The shadows tend to be more harsh. It tends to, the highlights get blown out. It's very difficult to make a good photograph, especially of a landscape when the sun's that high in the sky. So try to plan your shooting so that you're shooting in the morning and then you're shooting in late afternoon all the way to twilight if you can. And then in the middle part of the day, do your other stuff. That's when you wander around the town. That's when you go out to eat. That's when you hang out with your friends. Maybe have something to drink. Maybe do a little bit of work if it's a working vacation. You know, take care of all of that stuff in the middle of the day if you can. And then save the ends of the day, either morning or late afternoon or both if you can, for taking pictures. Next tip is photograph where you are. Photograph where you are. And this is a very interesting tip to me because one of the things that I noticed when I first got to Iceland, I was with these dozen great photographers. Every one of them had a little different philosophy on how they were going to approach the week. Some guys like Michael Reichman and Bill Atkinson were determined to get way, way, way out in the far distances of Iceland, and that's where they felt that they would find the types of images that they wanted to make. Other guys like John Isaac just sort of felt like, well, wherever I go, I'm going to find something to photograph. And he was going to depend on, and he did this, depend on his photographer's eye to find great shots no matter where he was. I did a little bit of each. I did a little bit of going way out, and I did a little bit of just walking around Reykjavik. And I got good images in both places. So I really believe it's not so much that you have to go to these super exotic places in order to get great shots, although it's nice to do that. And I think it's really good to have some of that in the mix. But don't just toss your photography aside just because you're not in some wonderful place. Go out. If the light is good, if the lighting is good, then just photograph where you are. Take pictures where you are. Use your photographer's eye to find shots. And if it's not the greatest lighting in the world, then maybe move in a little closer on your subjects. If you got fantastic lighting, look for something where you can step back a little bit and get vistas or nice building shots or whatever happens to be available. But remember, don't think that you have to go somewhere wildly exotic to get great shots. You can get great shots anywhere. And I would say that good lighting is more important than good location when it comes to travel photography. So don't pass up good light. Go out there and shoot. Number three is when you are on the road, when you are traveling and you're in a car and you see something interesting, get out of the car. Get out of the car. Now, all of us at some time or other, and I even did this in Iceland, would take some shots hanging out the car window. Now, usually, in my case, I was trying to do something creative. I wasn't trying to shoot a majestic landscape hanging out the car window going at, you know, whatever, 50 kilometers an hour. I did find some really nice, dusty road shots and things like that while driving. But generally speaking, if you see a good sight, if you see something that looks interesting, park the car, get out, and go over there. Hike over there. Have your kit, your camera equipment, so that you can carry it with you, so that you can throw it over your back or, whatever system you use, make sure you can pick it up and walk and go over there. And I think this is, again, very important because very rarely will the best shot be hanging out a car window. It does happen. But generally speaking, you have to get out of the car, walk 100 yards, 200 yards, a quarter mile, whatever, and then look at the shot and try to find something that's the right angle, the right composition. Take your shot and then walk back to the car and then go on to the next spot. Number four is know where your equipment is. And this sort of ties into the whole car thing also. But I'm very meticulous about how I pack my camera bag. And I always have the lenses in the same spot, the memory cards, the batteries, all that stuff is always in the same spot. And I'll give you an example of how that can be important. We had a carload of people while we're driving to a location one day in Iceland, and we're driving along and came up on this hill, and there were three sheep up on this bluff, and they were just resting, and there were two lambs and a ewe, and they looked fabulous. The backdrop was perfect, the foreground was good, the lighting was good, everything was fabulous. Now, the thing about photographing sheep is that most of the time, you can only get so close to them. So, if you have, for instance, your, like I had a 24 to 105 millimeter lens on my Canon 5D, so it was a true 24 to 105. That wasn't enough reach to get the shot that I wanted. So, everyone, three of us scrambled out of the car. Everyone had medium telephoto lenses, and they started shooting. I rolled the dice because I knew exactly where my long lens was in my camera bag. I rolled the dice, reached into my camera bag, pulled out the long lens, made a quick lens switch, and then did my shots. And it only took me really a few seconds to make the change. As a result of all the shots that were grabbed at that time, I got the best shot. I got the best shot because I had the long lens. I was able to zoom in. I was able to create a composition that dropped out the background better. All the way around, it was just a nicer shot. If I had to fiddle around with my camera bag and look for my long lens, then I don't think I would have gotten it. I think by that time, the sheep would have probably moseyed on. They have very little tolerance for photographers, and I don't blame them. Who wants a bunch of people jumping out of the car and start clicking at you? I don't think anyone likes that, especially sheep that are used to their solitude. out there in the Iceland wilds. So anyway, know where your equipment is so that if you have to grab a memory card or a lens, you can do it quickly and hopefully still get the shot. Number five is walk around your subject. Walk around your subject. I'll use the sheep example again. When I first got the long lens on, I took a few shots right away, and they looked pretty good, and I could have just bagged it right there, got back in the car, and gone on to the next location. But after I got those few shots, I started walking over to the right, and I found another angle that was better. And then I found another angle that was better, and so on and so forth, and I just kept shooting the whole time. So even though I thought that first shot was good, which it was, the subsequent shots after walking a few yards to the right were even better and even better. So don't forget to walk around your subject. Don't forget to look at the building from a different angle. Even if you think that your first shot is the shot, go ahead and say, you know what, I'm just going to just take a gander over here anyway. And a lot of times you'll find that with a little bit of, kind of angling around one direction or another, you'll find even a better shot. The next tip is, take food and water. It's number six. Take food and water. When you're going to be gone for the day, you're planning to be, say you're going to take off in the afternoon and you're going to try to catch the sweet light. And then, your plans are, then you're going to come back and have a dinner and do whatever. And it all sounds really good as you're sort of mapping out the day. But make sure that you take some food and water with you. Because a lot of times what happens is that once you're actually out on the location, that you'll find something else that you want to photograph, or suddenly the sky changes, or suddenly when you thought you were going to leave, this really wonderful twilight sky appears, and you need to keep shooting, or maybe you need to go a little farther than you originally thought. All these things sort of happen, and the last thing that you want to do is really bag the shoot, head back just because you're hungry and you want to have something to eat, because chances are you'll never get back to that location, or if you do, the conditions might be completely different. So make sure that you have food and water with you so that you can extend the shoot as long as you need to. Now, along with that, and I didn't put it on the list, but I think it's important, is have some sort of communication with the folks back at the base camp or back at the hotel or wherever they happen to be. So if you do stay out later, and if you have cell phone connectivity, you can give them a call and let them know what's going on. Number seven is capture high quality. And again, this is one of those things, at first it sounds very common sense, but there's a little bit to it. When you're on location, and especially if you're at a place that you may never come back to again, the chances of making a great photograph for some reason are always pretty high. In other words, because I think it's because you're really focused on your photography and you get into a zone, and great shots seem to happen, under these conditions. So because the odds of you capturing a great shot are much higher, make sure that you use good technique. Now, all of us were shooting raw when we were in Iceland, and I don't think anyone ever even considered shooting any other format, only because they knew that they could get the most out of all their images shooting raw. Now, as I talked before, I don't shoot raw 100% of the time over the course of the year. I shoot raw, for instance, when I was in Iceland, I shot raw the whole time. But there might be times when I shoot JPEG. But in this case, because I was under such spectacular conditions and working with these great landscapes and people and colors and everything, raw was really the way to go. I wanted to give myself every opportunity to make the best photograph possible out of these compositions. Also, other things, such as make sure you have a tripod with you. You may only use it three or four times during the course of the week, but those three or four times that you have it, you'll be so glad that you have it, because it will be the difference between a sharp shot or something that's just too soft to use. Or it'll be the difference between allowing you to go to that slow shutter speed so that you can increase your depth of field so that you can stop down your aperture and get both the foreground and the background in focus. Or it'll be the difference between having a waterfall shot that has nice flowing water because you have a tripod and you can use a long shutter speed instead of one that just looks like everyone else's snapshot. So there are times when tripods are very important, and it's good to have one with you, and that gives you the opportunity, again, to go from good photograph to great photograph. You know, and then along those same lines, you know, make sure you take your good lenses and have them with you. You know, make sure that you're paying attention to your controls. Make sure that you have your ISO setting at 100 or 200 and not 1600 just because you forgot to set it back after doing some night shooting the previous night. All of those things. Really focus on your technique. Try to make yourself, you know, look at your camera controls, look at your equipment, and think about the way to get the best shot possible. Tip number 8 is isolate your compositions. This is a very important tip. And the more that I hang around photographers who really know what they're doing, the more I believe this is the key to their success. Busy compositions, you know, that have too many things going on that distract the eye, never have as much emotional impact, or I should say seldom have as much emotional impact as a composition that tends to be more simple, that focuses the eye and really drives home a point. And I saw photographers shoot nothing but big, wide expanses of green. But because the clouds were moving and it was creating patterns on the green, they would find a spot in all of this and make a composition that later on when I looked at, I would be there standing with them when they photographed it and, you know, sort of wondering where the shot was. And then I would look at their images later on that night after we get back, and because they had isolated the composition and because they had created something that was simple and beautiful and powerful, it would just be stunning. And the same thing when you're photographing people, when you're shooting in the city, no matter where you are, try to isolate a few key elements, pay very close attention to the background, to try to make sure there isn't any distracting stuff back there. Or if there is, see if you can at least drop it out by using a wide aperture and softening it with lack of depth of field there. But try to isolate your compositions, make them strong and powerful, and stay away from busy. Number 9 is a pretty simple one. Take a polarizer. Yeah, you know, we have just about every other filter built into our camera. We have a warming filter. We have a cooling filter. We have ways to, you know, deal with odd lighting. But the one thing that isn't built into the camera is a polarizing filter. And they're very handy to have in two ways. One way is, of course, to, you know, use them to make skies more dramatic, to get rid of reflections, you know, all that kind of normal polarizing stuff. But remember, with polarizers, you also lose two stops of light. They have two stops density. So sometimes when you want to do something such as slow down the water in a waterfall for a more dramatic effect, but there's a lot of light and you can't get that long shutter speed that you want, you can put a polarizer on the front of your lens, and then that slows things down another two stops. And sometimes that can be the difference between, you know, this nice flowing water that you like or just an average shot. So polarizers have, two main uses. They really can add drama to your skies and reduce reflections. And at the same time, they can serve as a neutral density filter to allow you to use longer shutter speeds in those instances where that's important for your composition. And finally, number 10, my last tip, is learn from what you've shot and then go shoot it again. And when you're on an extended field trip, sometimes this is a great technique. Now, what I mean by that is that, you know, go out and shoot something, shoot it the best that you can, and then analyze it. Whether you're analyzing it at lunch or you take a break or you just even go back to the car and maybe just review your shots for a few minutes. Think about them. Think about how you could make them better. Think about, you know, where they fall just a little bit short. Really analyze the image. Look at the composition. Look at the lighting. Look at the way that you handled the color balance setting. Look at all aspects of it. Then, once you make up your mind about, you know, the shot, is it as good as I could have made it? Or, you know, if I just tightened it up a little bit more, it would be better. Or if I just chose a different angle, or if I just waited for a different time of day when the light was falling from a different angle. You know, whatever you come up with, then go back and shoot it again. This is a wonderful thing that digital photography brings to our learning process, because it allows us to do this quickly. We don't have to wait for the film to come back from the lab in order to analyze it and figure out you know, how well we did and what we could do better. So take advantage of the strength of digital photography and really analyze your shots. Really think about how you shot them and how you could make them better. Now, this doesn't mean beat yourself up, and this doesn't mean don't enjoy what you've already photographed. I don't mean that at all. What I mean is that when you have the opportunity to go back and shoot something again, then look at how you've shot it the first time and see if you can go back and make a better shot. And if you can't, then be happy with what you have, knowing that, you know, you did the best you could under those circumstances. Generally speaking, we're our own worst critics. On the kind of images that we make. But that's okay. That's one of the ways that makes us better photographers. But once the shoot is all over, once it's all said and done, then you need to sit back, take a deep breath, pick your best shots, and enjoy them. And let others enjoy them too. And when you show them to other people, you know, don't say, oh, well, you know, I thought I had it, but I didn't quite get it, you know. That really ruins it for folks when they're looking at your pictures. Once you've made your decision on what the best shots are and you're showing them to folks, then stand by them and be proud of them and say, you know, this was a wonderful location. I had fun shooting there, and I'm glad you like these images. Okay, so those are my top 10 shots for shooting in the field. And, you know, just I just want to thank all the Iceland photographers that I worked with. You guys on the adventure team, you guys were great, and you really helped me think about the best way to work in the field, and hopefully my shots have improved too. Okay. Just a little bit of housekeeping before I wrap up here. I want to talk about photo assignment for a second. I'm going to get the August shots up, the July shots actually, up as quickly as I can. I'm a little behind right now, but I should get them posted here in the next day or so. One thing that I noticed was that we didn't have as many entries this month as we had in the past. So maybe I'm not beating the drum quite hard enough. Maybe it's just summer and people are busy with other things. Or maybe the assignment wasn't that interesting. It was heat. Although the shots that did come in were really nice. And right now, of course, we've started the next photo assignment, which is red for August. And so I just want to encourage you, if you're thinking about participating, not to wait too long. You know, don't wait too close to the end of the month. Start working on your shot. Start kind of, you know, doing some tests or experimenting, or at least keep it in the back of your mind and try to get your shot turned in, you know, before we get too close to the deadline. And hopefully we can get a better turnout this month than we had for July. The shots that I do have for July, though, are terrific, and I guess they're just going to get more attention. Maybe that's just the way it works sometimes, is, you know, the natural selection sort of thing. Grab shots also a little bit lighter right now than they have been. I know part of that might be because I was focusing on Iceland last week and talking mainly about that, and I wasn't running as many. And I've noticed that the more grab shots I run, usually the more that I get. So I'll start running some. I put one up on Sunday night, and I'll get another one up as soon as possible. But the grab shots are a very important part of the site. So again, if you're sitting on something good, send it on in, and I'll try to get it posted as soon as possible. And the last thing I have, you know, just in general, I think we're getting most of the bugs worked out on the site in terms of its performance. I still feel like we have to do a little bit more work with the comments. I notice that when you post a comment, it seems to take a while before the server actually records it. And then so what some folks are doing, they get impatient because they're not getting feedback. So then they'll click again and then click again. And then they end up, you know, posting two or three comments. If that happens to you, don't worry. I can go in and clean it up so that, you know, only your first post will show up. But I just sort of feel like that we need to make that work a little bit better so that it's more intuitive and it feels more natural. So keep banging away on the comments, and if you would, don't get shy on me. And at the same time, I'll try to get those last few bugs ironed out. Everything else, though, seems to be working fairly well. So I think we made the transition to the new server in good shape. And considering all the stuff that's going on, I'm really happy about that. So I want to thank my team, you know, David Lentz, my system administrator, and Mark Levitt, my producer, for helping us make this a pretty tough transition. You know, it's never easy when you move from one box to another and actually change ISPs and DNS all at the same time. So great stuff. All right, enough of that. Go out, get some shots. I hope these field tips help you. I have lots of stuff lined up to talk about. I have lots of interviews with photographers. I have just tons of stuff. So we're all going to be busy here over the next few months. Please stay tuned in. Subscribe via iTunes Music Store if you haven't already. Participate on the site, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye now.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, web blogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.